From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is The Local Edition, and I'm Jason Dole. Hope you're doing well this evening. Thank you so much for being here with me. Coming up, a state auditor is sentenced for stealing more than $400,000 from the town of Wallkill. Ulster County is the first county in the state to pass new tax incentives for homeowners. And we explore wildlife rehabilitation in the Catskills. We'll also get the details of the possible comeback of the famous Grossinger's Resort right here in Liberty, New York. All of these stories and more when I talk to Lana Bellamy and Maria Silva of the Times Union. But first, we start with news from Albany, because a woman appeared in federal court this afternoon accused of plotting to plant a bomb at the New York State Capitol. Authorities say 35-year-old Jessica Bowie of Albany pledged allegiance to the Islamic State earlier this year, and they say she wanted to, quote, destroy as much of the building as possible and kill the senators while they are meeting, end quote. First Assistant U.S. Attorney John Sarcone says that Bowie was arrested on Wednesday while meeting with undercover federal agents.
The allegations in this complaint are deeply disturbing, that someone would harbor such hatred toward our way of life and seek to target the New York State Capitol and New York State senators. That's an attack on democracy itself, and one we will not tolerate.
In other news, as dairy farmers struggle with the costs due to America's trade dispute with Canada and the war in Iran, Governor Kathy Hochul celebrated the opening of a $650 million dairy production facility today in Monroe County. The Democrat said that Coca-Cola's new hub for its Fairlife line of dairy products will process an enormous amount of milk.
5 to 6 million pounds of milk every day. That's hard to comprehend. Think about what it takes to get the milk out of a single cow. Was that a typo? 5 to 6 million pounds? It's real. And so we're excited about this.
New York supported the construction of the Webster facility with more than $80 million in state funding. And today's ribbon cutting was held a day after Hochul announced more than $12 million in state funding to support infrastructure projects to benefit dairy farmers. And big thanks to the New York Public News Network for those reports. Still to come in the second half of the program, I talked to Times Union reporter Maria Silva about two big Catskill stories, a new tax incentive for homeowners in Ulster County, the first of its kind, and the plans to bring back the Grossinger's Resort in Liberty, New York, which, if you aren't familiar with that name, it was the setting and inspiration for the Dirty Dancing movie. But first, we have more news from the Times Union, including the sentencing in the case of $400,000 being stolen from the town of Wallkill. For that, I spoke to Lana Bellamy, editor with the Times Union Hudson Valley, earlier this afternoon. Lana, welcome back to Radio Catskill.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start off with, you've got a story about a sentencing of a state official or an ex-state official, and they stole a lot of money from one Orange County town. What can you tell us?
Oh, yes, this is a story I had been following as a reporter and now as an editor as well. And it seems like this will be sort of closing the loop on it. So Tobias Otieno, 42-year-old man from Hyde Park, was a municipal auditor for the state comptroller's office. And he was sentenced this week in Orange County to 4 to 12 years in prison for second-degree grand larceny, which they charged him as a public corruption crime. And he admitted to stealing more than $400,000 from the town of Wallkill while he was conducting audits between June 2022 and September of 2024.
So this occurred while he was executing his duties for the state?
Yes. And so this is part of why it's a public corruption crime, too. So investigators have told us that while he was conducting these auditing, you know, services, which included analyzing financial operations in the town, payroll, procurements, and non-payroll disbursements, he was using his access to the town's bank accounts to transfer this public money into his personal business accounts for consulting firms. And so he took advantage of the fact that he was behind the scenes in order to enrich himself. One thing that the state comptroller's office also started doing, though, once they became aware of the criminal allegations, was, of course, he was suspended. And this was back in 2024. And then he was later fired. But part of this was also looking at the other audits that he had worked on for the state comptroller's office, because he wasn't only involved with auditing the town of Wallkill. So he started with the comptroller's office back in 2018, and between 2019 and 2023, he had audited several school districts, including Hendrick Hudson, Taconic Hills, East Ramapo, New Paltz, Peekskill, and East Ramapo schools. And he also helped audit the towns of Ankrum and Patterson in 2019 and 2020, even though those were before this town of Wallkill auditing period. They still needed to go back and make sure that nothing had gone wrong before, and the state comptroller's office said that those were okay. They only found evidence that he had stolen during this assessment in the town of Wallkill.
And the Orange County DA, can we talk about what they've been saying about this, and what are they saying to reassure local residents?
Well, the DA did put a reminder, David Hoefler, in a statement when he announced the sentencing for Mr. Otieno. You know, he called the conduct a self-serving crime that subverted the trust placed in him by way of his employment, but also included a reminder that, you know, anytime a municipality is being audited by an outside agency, just try to keep a close eye on it so that if anything looks suspicious, you can report it right away. And I should note, too, that the DA also has made a point of saying that their investigation as part of the Orange County White Collar Crimes Task Force did not reveal that there was any wrongdoing by any local officials either.
Right. And also that the stolen funds had been recovered. Now on the SUNY New Paltz, they're going to have a degree related to deaf studies. And this is a new program, huh?
Oh, yes. I thought this was a pretty interesting, unique program offered by SUNY New Paltz. And we had freelancer William Bellin, who reported on it. He did a great job. And the school is saying that it's the first kind of program like this offered by a public university in the state. And really what it does is it expands on what SUNY New Paltz is already offering as a deaf studies minor under its Department of Communications Disorders. And it's the highest enrolled minor that the school has. So they have great hopes for this new major. They're expecting a first class of 25 students and to possibly graduate about 250 students over the next 10 years. And this program, it focuses a lot on culture of deaf and hard of hearing communities. So they're going to be offering classes on American Sign Language, but also cultural prejudices that people with hearing impairments face.
This is interesting. Do you have a sense of why people are taking these classes and like what career paths they want to pursue or what there's going on in their lives that this is what they're looking for in this major?
Well, we know that there's a great need for more care providers who specialize in deaf and hard of hearing, needs, basically. So one thing that the reporter did that made this very interesting to me was he spoke to a woman in Otsego County who was having trouble finding nearby care for her two children who have hearing impairments. And she said that the quality of care that she receives for her children is really great, but the problem has been the ratio of care providers to patients. And so, her appointments for developmental evaluations can cause her to have to travel, you know, more than an hour's direction one way just to have these necessary appointments for her children. And so a lot of this, too, I know that the school was looking at these critical service gaps between rural and more urban communities. And they sort of, part of justifying the need for the major overall, was looking at a report by a researcher from the Rochester Institute of Technology who found that, I mean, I guess it's not surprising, but you need the data, right? That a lot of these services are concentrated in dense areas, not so much in rural areas. And so with SUNY New Paltz creating this major here in an area that's not quite so populated like New York City or Rochester or Buffalo, you would hope that it would also help generate interest in local medical providers and employers to open offices that can hire these students in more rural areas or in the Catskills.
Can you just tell us a little bit about student Chloe Gapinski?
Oh, yes. That was another great interview that William did. So Gapinski has been studying deaf studies as a minor since she first arrived in New Paltz in 2024 and is on the executive board of the university's ASL club. And she said that club has been trying to build an open environment for experienced signers and welcome newcomers to learning American Sign Language. And she also has some hearing impairments herself. So she has really tried to get the club to work with faculty, including the Deaf Studies Minors coordinator and a professor, to raise support for this new major. So it's also really nice to see that the university was working with what was important to students themselves, you know?
Yeah, and the article actually ends with a quote from that student. She says, quote, "It just goes to show how at New Paltz, everyone is important, no matter your race, gender, or if you have a disability. I'm very grateful for the people who've pushed to get to where we are today." And that's a New Paltz student, Chloe Gapinski, there talking this article. So, well, thank you for that. Now, finally, we are going to close with a story about wildlife rehabilitators. And this is a story that Roger Hannigan-Gilson did.
Oh, yes, Roger. Great environmental reporter that we have. This was a really fun one because he came up with the idea for the story when he was reporting on the Greene County Sheriff's Office receiving a call last month about an injured red-tailed hawk and how several rehabilitators were helping with its recovery. So while he was reporting out that story, he started talking to a couple of different wildlife rehabilitators and was like, "This is very interesting work. I think people would want to know a little bit more about it." So earlier this week, Roger and our photographer Lori Van Buren traveled out into rural Greene County, into the Catskills, to talk to Dave LaVerge, who is a wildlife rehabilitator with Friends of the Feathered and Furry Wildlife Center in the Catskills. And he cares for orphaned, injured, and sick animals and helps return them to nature.
Well, there certainly is a lot of wildlife and nature up in the Catskills, up in Greene County, and so this makes sense. Could you tell me a little bit about the work they do? How do they do what they do there?
Sure, yes. So their work is actually licensed by the state, but they are volunteers, so they're not being paid for their time, and they're working out of their homes, and they're mostly relying on donations. So at LaVerge's home, he was caring for all sorts of animals because he has licenses to work with both small and large animals. So he was caring for squirrels, great horned owls, black bears, bobcats, bald eagles, and he even had an osprey. But he's just one of many who does this important work, even just in our area. So Roger also spoke to Tanya Fricke, who runs Catskill Mountain Wildlife Rehabilitation out of her home in Cairo. And, you know, she really got into it unofficially as a teenager, and she told Roger the brief story of how she and her dad helped rehabilitate 5 baby raccoons when they found them outside in the cold. So a lot of this is really done by people who are just really devoted about caring for animals. And the state says that there are 780 people with small mammal wildlife rehabilitation licenses. So that's the most common one. And that includes like squirrels, basically, you know, things, mammals that are about that size. And then the large animal licenses for other creatures like bears, you know, bigger ones.
Oh, the real big
probably
ones.
Probably bobcats. Yeah.
Lana, big shout out to Lori Van Buren, the photographer for the story. These pictures are phenomenal, and they had really great subjects to work with. The animals are wonderful, but the pictures are phenomenal. Listener, these stories are up now at timesunion.com. Timesunion.com. We've been talking to Lana Bellamy, editor with Times Union Hudson Valley. Lana, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
It is The Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole, and we have more news from the Times Union right now, including the latest on the plans to revive the famous Grossinger's Resort. And for that and more, I turn to the reporter on these stories, Maria Silva. Welcome back to The Local Edition.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you've got news just out today that Ulster County's approved a tax break for low-income homeowners that it's applying to the county portion of property taxes for eligible homeowners. We'll get into the whole eligibility of this, but can you first start talk about the need for this? Like where did this new tax break come from?
Yeah, this all stems from an imbalance that people, some low-income homeowners had. We've seen that a lot of those low-income homeowners had purchased affordable homes from organizations like Habitat for Humanity, and they did so by using government subsidies. But those people had been running into a problem, which is the homeowner gets the house at an affordable price, but in exchange, there are permanent restrictions on how much they can sell the home for later on. And that is by design, right? To make sure that the homes stay affordable. But at the same time, their property taxes were still calculated using the full market value of the home. So the homeowner can end up paying taxes based on a value that they can't actually realize later by selling the house. So what a lot of organizations had been saying for years was that this actually makes the homes unaffordable for many because they can't pay the full property taxes. You know, the logic is that affordable housing isn't affordable if people can buy the house but can't actually afford to keep it. So we've seen that the state actually passed a state law that tries to ease that imbalance, that tax burden on some of those low-income homeowners. You know, that law passed last year as part of a broader homeownership package, and it changed that imbalance and provides an exemption for qualifying homeowners.
Is what the Ulster County Legislature just passed, does that work with or because of what the state already passed?
Yes. So the state legislature passed that law and provides an exemption. So the way that local governments can use that is by opting into the law. And the way that Ulster County did that is by passing, approving a local law. So the Ulster County became the first county in New York State to opt into that state law. And so the state law actually allowed local governments to offer property tax exemptions from ranging between 25% to 75% of assessed value. And in this case, the Ulster County Legislature approved a 50% exemption. And there's one specific caveat here, because that local law in Ulster County applies only to the county portion of the homeowner's property tax bill. So it is not a 50% reduction in the homeowner's entire property tax bill. It applies only to the Ulster County portion of the property tax. And so school and municipal taxes don't automatically get cut. Those jurisdictions would have to opt in separately, which they can do so by opting into that law. And that would actually provide a deeper a deeper help. It would actually help even more so. It would go even deeper for those low-income homeowners.
Ulster County is the first county to kind of opt into this option. Is this something that's intended to help the overall housing crisis that we're experiencing in New York State and especially in the Hudson Valley?
Yeah, it's one of those ways, right? So this is intended to help people, not just in the short term, right? Like the policy is aimed at the long-term cost of homeownership, not just simply helping somebody purchase a house, right? So there's organizations like Habitat for Humanity. They build and restore housing, and then they sell it at a much lower price. And that does help, but then, you know, the problem that a lot of those low-income homeowners were running into was that, you know, they couldn't really keep that those homes because the property taxes were too high. So, yeah, in a way, this is a way to make sure that those low-income homeowners can stay in those homes. And in a way, you know, it really does help people who have been struggling. But we have seen that Ulster County has been making some strides or making, passing some laws to address the housing crisis, right? And it's affecting not just Ulster County, but the Hudson Valley as a whole, and even New York State as a whole. But in Ulster County, this tax break is one of several recent efforts by Ulster County officials to use property tax policy, and that is aimed to ease costs, as we deal with this housing crisis. On the state level, there was a separate bill introduced in Albany this year, actually, that would allow local governments in Ulster and certain other upstate counties to offer qualifying full-time residents a property tax exemption of up to 10%. That is different from this other tax exemption that we just talked about. But that proposal that was developed by State Senator Michelle Hinchey with Metzger aims to help year-round residents stay in communities whose housing markets have been strained by second homes and short-term rentals. That bill passed the state Senate in June and is now in an assembly committee. So that was a separate bill that we wrote about actually in sometime in May, I believe. But also, you know, in the legislature, there have been other efforts. Like there's another bill that was introduced by Michelle Hinchey again and Assembly Member Sarhana Shrestha in the assembly that this bill would authorize Ulster County through a local law to create an income-based surcharge on high-income residents.
That sounds like the sort of thing that might create a certain degree of pushback when people hear about that. An income-based surcharge on high-income residents in an effort to kind of like balance things out in terms of housing. What are the prospects for that, do you think?
Well, the surcharge would only apply to individuals earning above $200,000 for individuals and above $400,000 for joint filers. So I don't think a lot of people in Ulster County can say that they make $200,000. So it would only apply to a very specific population who are making substantially more than, you know, the average.
In a statement tied to this news, Ulster County Executive Jen Metzger said, quote, families who purchase permanently affordable homes should not face a tax burden tied to a market value they will never be able to realize, end quote from Jen Metzger. So it'll also be interesting to see, since Ulster County is the first county to do this, to see in what ways do other counties implement it and what might they learn from each other once other counties start doing so.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for now, Ulster County is the first one to opt into the state law. We'll see. We'll monitor. We'll see what other Hudson Valley communities and counties decide to opt into, because in the Hudson Valley, the housing crisis has been, a major topic. So I wouldn't be surprised if other Hudson Valley counties follow suit, but we'll stay on top of that.
All right. Well, thank you for that report. Now, this is the thing we've been looking forward to this whole program. We're going to bring the news back to Liberty, New York, where Radio Catskill is, and talk about something that we usually talk about in the past, which is one of the big flagship fortress hotels of the Borscht Belt era, Grossinger's, here in Liberty, New York. There's talk about Grossinger's seeing some new life. What can you tell us?
Yeah, what I can say is that after years since 1986 of, you know, being abandoned and unused, Grossinger's appears to be under development, or there's at least plans to kind of revive it in the future. There's a Florida developer called PPG Development that has purchased the land that formerly housed the famous Borscht Belt resort, and they purchased it last year for $14.75 million, and they recently introduced plans to turn this, one of the most famous properties of the old Catskills, and turn it into a large year-round luxury resort and residential development. So right now the plans are in the Liberty Planning Board, and they've recently, this past summer, representatives of PPG Development attended a public meeting and presented what, you know, the plans are. And I can talk a little bit more about those plans. They basically want to, the proposal includes 100 room hotel, about 175 luxury private residences, which would have access to the resort, two golf courses, and an equestrian / polo center, a farm, sports complex, restaurants, spa, and wellness facilities. It's a huge operation. And I mean, this is located in a huge property. It's 1,029 acres in Liberty. And construction, if approved, would take a while. The developer has estimated that the proposal would happen in four phases.
I imagine they're going to be building a lot of new buildings, and you're going to have to. Is there any talk of reusing any of the original buildings or infrastructure there and repairing things? Is that in any of those four steps?
Well, there isn't much left. Most of the remaining buildings were demolished in 2018, and one of the few remaining buildings also burned in 2022. So there isn't much left there except this large golf course, and the developer has mentioned that they want to bring that back, I think it was called the Big G golf course.
Yeah, and the golf course in some ways kind of outlived the original resort. That's the aspect that kept going. And then in, you know, past couple of decades, and people would talk about doing something there, it usually hinged around the golf course. If people were showing interest in revitalizing Grossinger's, it was usually about the golf course, not a resort. But this sounds like they're planning to do, like, it sounds like they're going to showcase the golf course, but then also give people a lot of other stuff to do.
Yes. Yeah. And it's a huge build out. And again, it would take several years, but right now it's under review. The project still needs environmental review under the CEQA process, and the developer has requested a site plan and special use permit approvals. The environmental review process will review if the project will have any potential environmental impacts. But again, you know, this would essentially bring back what was there before. So we'll see what the Liberty Planning Board concludes right after doing all the revisions and all the evaluations. But yeah, we'll keep an eye on it.
All right. Well, anecdotally, they do seem excited about it. But yes, we've got to go through the process. We'll keep an eye on Grossinger's here in Liberty. And if anything happens, Maria, I'll come to you and you can tell us.
Thank you so much.
Maria Silva reports for Times Union, and these stories are up now at timesunion.com. Maria, thank you for talking to us.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you so much.
Well, that is definitely it for the local edition tonight. I got to get out of here pretty quick. And who am I? I'm Jason Dole. I want to thank you so much for being here with me for the latest local news this evening. Stay with us coming up at 7. You got 2 hours of great music spun for you live by Andy Carlson on Ramble Tamble. I think he's going to be playing a little bit of Pixies for you, but we'll see what happens. Before that, we've got more news on the way from The Daily. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.
No radio? No problem. The Radio Catskill app has you covered.
Hear conversations, music, and NPR live, no radio required, and stay up on the latest local news whenever you need it. Download the Radio Catskill app today. WJR.